Right now, we're going to talk about the New York Jets. I can't believe it. Football is here, BT, tonight,
week one.
Me too. NFL, you got the Cowboys and Eagles tonight. Obviously, Jets on Sunday taking on the Steelers. To help us break down that game, we welcome in right now the color analyst for Jets Radio and former Jet tight end, Anthony Becht. Anthony, how are you ahead of this week one game?
Awesome, brother. BT South, great to be on, man.
Yeah, and look, we obviously know the big news with the Jets. Unfortunately, a negative thing before we even get started. So let's start there with Tucker, who officially, you know, we talked about it yesterday, BT, he's obviously officially out for the year, going to have that surgery, triceps torn there. How big of a blow, Ant, is this for the Jets?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's voted a captain. You know, I think this is kind of a recurring theme with him, unfortunately, is these injuries that randomly come up for him. And it's unfortunate, you know, wherever it happened, individual drill or whatever, it's not great. I will say this, though. I mean, when you look at what they have, they did go get Josh Myers, who I think they got as an extremely discounted player for a guy that started for the last 3-4 years in Minnesota. And you can slide Tippmann over. They want to use Newman. He's got a little bit of experience. Obviously, I'm almost assuming that Tippmann's going to slide over. But is it drastic? Is it terrible? It does kill your depth a little bit, obviously, because you got to move guys around. But, yeah, he's a key component, a key player. But I don't think there's a massive drop-off with another guy, especially when you have a quarterback like that's as mobile as Fields is. It does help guys play a little bit better and takes away from what that one-on-one block looks like throughout the season.
All right, so I wanted to give you a chance to hit the AVT stuff. I want to take a step back, though, Anthony. I want to take you to the year that you were drafted. Jets had 4 first-round picks. We all know who they were. And you come in, and the Jets are already a good team. Now, the year before you came, 99, Vinny blows out his Achilles, obviously. Yeah. 98, 2 years before that, they're knocking on the door to the Super Bowl. So you show up, and the culture's there. And you know when there's a good culture, and you know when there's not. So how effective so far, early stages, is Aaron Glenn in creating a culture? Because last year's culture with Saleh and Gase and all, it was just awful. Where are we with the culture?
Well, I mean, you can even extend that probably, you know, over a few coaches prior to that. I would say that, I mean, there's no question in my mind, absolutely, and being with Aaron and where he's been and what he's done and who he's played for, that culture 1,000% will flip. The caveat to that is building the winning culture, right, which you were talking about with the success in 98, 99, and some of those other years that we had through the early 2000s. You know, I just think for me that's where, okay, how does that all translate? And that ultimately trickles down to the people around him. It's the coordinators. It's the players that are brought in. It's the quarterback that you throw out there and how that comes together and how you can stick to what you see in your mind as your game plan to help this team flip from a, you know, mediocre losing kind of situation to now, okay, now we got a belief that we can win. We can win 1, 2, 3 games in a row. That's where you start seeing the cultural change on the winning side. The other side, the discipline, the belief, all that stuff will flip. But guys, you guys know as well as anybody, you got to win football games. Like as a head coach for me, I knew like, okay, I got to weigh a standard that I'm going to set that it's got to be every single day. But if I don't win as a coach, it don't matter about that stuff. And we've been able to do that. For AG, it's the same thing. How does it translate into W's? And we'll find out this weekend. There's a lot of, you know, new components, new pieces, new coaching staff. And again, it's got to trickle down and you got to have the right components around them. And we'll see what that looks like on Sunday.
And we'll see when the wins start coming here. And that's obviously what really matters here. But what I think drove all of us nuts, Anthony, is that, you know, and not to just bag on Saleh, he's a good guy, but he just didn't get it done. And not even going back to Gase, but Saleh in particular, he wasn't honest to me. Like, I'm watching these press conferences, never held anybody accountable, and it drove us nuts because we know better because we're New York sports fans. And to me, the one thing, one of the many things that I think AG's going to be very different with is he's going to publicly, I don't mean embarrass players, but hold them accountable. Does this team have the enough dogs for him to be raw and for it not to impact the team? Because he's going to be raw and he's going to be honest.
He is, BT, but it's a very slippery slope when, again, what's actually said to you, the media and the folks out there versus, okay, what's being said behind closed doors. I'm not going to sit here and say Saleh wasn't like that. I'm sure behind closed doors he did hold guys accountable. It just didn't work out. But for AG, yeah, he's going to – look, if we're out there, no one's going to be if the quarterback or receiver or lineman's not playing well, and we all see that, I mean, you know, a lot of people don't know the game of football, but if a guy's getting his ass whipped you know, it's going to be clear as day. He's going to say, hey, yeah, he's got to play better. He's going to believe in what he does. They're going to trust the process and what they're doing. So, yeah, there's a way to hold guys accountable without kind of brutally putting it out there. But I think, yeah, I think the guys respect him. I think the one thing that separates a lot of coaches sometimes, especially with AG, is there's a lot of street cred because he's been there. He's done it. He's done it at the highest level. Like, that resonates with players. It resonates with my players. Like, these things trickle down. But, again, you got to have ownership. You got to be up front. These guys want the truth. You know, whether it's out in public, maybe so in some certain ways, but behind closed doors, 100%. And I think that's what they'll respect him for. And again, that's part of that process and standard and that culture that's going to change, right, that you're talking about. That will help these players and hopefully, you know, what they're trying to build here for this season and years to come.
Well, don't you think the biggest aspect of that, and we're talking about Anthony Beck, the color analyst for Jets Radio, of course, former Jet tight end. Don't you think the biggest aspect of that would be the discipline as far as the lack of penalty? And we'll see that. Now, I want to ask you, how soon is it to expect that we see that? Glenn talked about it. We got to button things up. We can't be beating ourselves. No penalties. We didn't see that in the preseason games. How soon can we expect to see that type of discipline, buttoned up play from the Jets?
Yeah, I think that can happen instantaneously, guys. I mean, you know, the way they practice, the message he sends, not allowing it to you know, happen in practice, you know, what that when it does happen in practice, does he pull the guy? Does somebody else come in? Like, you got to set those standards throughout the practice. And I've heard it. I've heard the voice, the mic'd ups and the things that tempo, discipline, bring it back. Like, those things, when you got to do that you got to do it all the time. And you cannot let it slip. And it started day one with him. And I think that's the one thing that's been great is that's going to be what it's going to be. And it has to translate that. And if it doesn't, then they're going to get somebody else in there to do it. So I do believe that that's something that can, as far as penalties are concerned, can be a flip very quickly. So, again, he lives and breathes it every single day. The players know that. And he's going to hold them accountable. I mean, we saw a little bit in preseason. Guy hits a quarterback late, pulls him out of the game, jumps up. Like, that's how you get them to figure it out. And if they don't, you got to find somebody else to do it.
All right, so you're the former pro, and you're coaching as well. So if they don't do that week one, I don't want to hear any nonsense about, oh, no, it's going to happen. That's something that you said as a former player. Well, no, I'm just saying, not that we're going to say
so
that.
You're at BT. You got to be honest. Like, everybody's going to have penalties, like, week one. Like, it's going to be a changing thing.
Well, I'm going to call foul on you right now. It's Sal, not BT, but that's
well, no,
okay.
Should you see it, I said instantaneously being season, this season, right? So, yeah, it's going to it has to change. If it doesn't, they are going to be where they're at. And AG said that. They're not going to be very good. They're not going to win any games if they continue to do that. So it's something of a point of emphasis, and it should improve because he makes it a point every single day that he's with them.
It's the most maddening aspect of all the losses. I mean, that's the bottom line. You win or you lose, but the penalties, it's been ridiculous. So
terrible, Anthony, there's no doubt. He can't stand for it, and that's what he's doing.
Can't have it. All right, no so question. We all know Sauce and Breece and Garrett and Q and Quincy. We know the names, right? Give us a name or two, a new guy on the team that you think is going to really show up starting Sunday. We're going to hear his name. We're going to see him make plays, offense or defense. Anybody jump out?
Yeah, I think, you know, on offense, man, and I hate going with rookies, but his temperament is different. You know, I have a son that plays. He was taught differently from me. Mason Taylor had a dad that played at a high level, Hall of Fame level. He just looks different to me. He's more mature. He's been in stadiums where they've had 100,000 people. Like, this isn't going to be very big for him. That transition and what they can utilize and the fact that, okay, we're waiting to see who this other receiver is going to be. He's got a unique opportunity to really make a big statement as a rookie in the tight end position. And quite frankly, as you look at the history of the tight end, it's been kind of, you know, it's been suspect.
That's been awful.
I mean, we can all sit there. Yeah, it's been bad, you know. So I think a guy like Mason, to me, he's just built a little different than maybe the last, you know, decade of guys that have come through. And I'm really interested to see what that looks like. And to me, I always tell people this example of, like, how do you make tight end successful? I go back to when Parcells and those guys drafted Jason Witten. Jason Witten was not a high draft pick. He was not a very fast tight end. They force-fed him the ball. And from there, he just became a great talent. You got to get this guy the ball. You got to have stuff in your playbook and say, look, he is a featured guy on this play or that play. And you got to give him that confidence. Confidence early in anybody's career, especially a rookie, is gonna sky's the limit. So that's one guy. On defense, you know, I really like the secondary guys, the Adds, the Stevens, the Cisco. You know, Cisco's a you know, been a traditionally box guy, very physical, very tough, but he is a ball hawk guy. He does get a little aggressive. He may get in a bad spot, but man, he does get around the football. He goes and attacks. And again, Stevens is a guy that really has shown up throughout the entire camp, and he looks to be the guy. That's a really nice combination, guys, when you got a secondary and then you add Harrison now with the run stopping, which we haven't seen, that extra piece. That's going to, I think, lift the defense up a little bit more to help them really be better than what they've been in the past.
Yeah, by the way, I thought you might say Mason Taylor. I know he's got some wiggle. Can he block? Because Jets going to run the ball probably 30 times a week.
I'll say this. There's no tight ends coming out of college that can block effectively. He's just got to get in the way and do it right. I think he wants to do it. It's an attitude.
Okay.
You don't just come out of college and block anymore. Those days are over. Like that doesn't happen. You got to have a mindset. It's an attitude. And I just think for him, he gets it. He's been blocking guys in the SEC. Like, if I'm going to pick any defensive ends and people for him to block, those are the guys I want him to come from. But I just think it means it matters to him. He's going to have his ups and downs there. I'm not going to sit here and I will not co-sign anybody coming out of college that can be a really good blocker. But he'll push himself. He'll get good at it. And they won't put him in those positions where he's going to kind of fall out. But this week, I'll be honest, he's going to be part of whatever that chip game. I mean, you can't let Watt and Membu be on one-on-one the entire game. It's a great matchup. Watt's obviously got a clear advantage, but you got to have another piece there, and he's probably going to be part of that as well.
For years, Anthony, the Jets' defense has been overrated. We expect them to be a team that's going to run the football quite a bit. I don't know how much AVT is going to change that. What do you think will be the identity of this Jets team?
They are going to have to be that, and everybody's going to know that. I think, you know, listen, Justin Fields, there are a lot of things that we're waiting to see. How is that development in the passing game look? How do they utilize him differently now with a full game plan? Who does he fall and get the ball to outside of just, you know, Garrett Wilson? How do the backs imply? But I will say this, he does have a skill set that's elite through the NFL, and that's his legs. And I just think between the running backs and the quarterback, that is a problem for defenses, even if you're trying to stop it. Anytime you have the extra element of the quarterback, you're one guy short on defense. I don't care who you're playing. And if you looked at last year's film with some of the Steelers who've ran teams that have just abolished them running wise, you look at like the Ravens game last year and a couple where they had those kind of quarterbacks, it wasn't pretty. So these are opportunities. That tape's being watched, but that's going to be the identity of the team. You know, you're going to look at it, you know, minimum 30 times every single game. If it's less than that, I really don't think they're going to have to win, but the quarterback's going to have to make some plays with his arm clearly for them to take those next steps. That's what we got to see. And is it going to happen week one? It could. Is it? But you got to get four games to me privately as I look at this team. That's how I'll get a full synopsis of where he is. But he has been an improved player everywhere he's been, even though he hasn't had consistency on anywhere he's been. It's now he's got the confidence. People are backing him. How does he raise his game up to take it to the next step? And can he do it now? Because that's what everybody wants to see.
And I pointed that out. You know, not everybody wants to hear it, and I want to see it because it's not like it's been massive in improvement here. But, you know, year by year, 4 years, that completion percentage gone up incrementally. You know, he's thrown, 14 or 15 more touchdowns than picks over his career. He won four games, you know, out of six before he got benched. Like, he's not a scrub. He's just not an elite thrower. He's got a very unique skill set. And if the Jets can play the way they want to play, Justin Fields will be awesome. And if not, and they're behind early, and he's got to throw it 25, 30 times a game, the Jets are going nowhere. I mean, I think that's the bottom line, right?
Yeah, I think this is the key, guys. Tanner Engstrand is coming in with the Ben Johnson system. That's the system he knows and loves. That quarterback in that system was not Justin Fields. So how does he acclimate that system to make Justin Fields the most effective quarterback to have success in what they do? And that's a challenge because he's never called plays before in regular season game situations. And now he's building something around a different style of quarterback. And that's what he's probably been working on the offseason, trying to figure all that out. And what's that going to look like? I'm interested to see because clearly it's not going to be the same mentality as what Detroit was, even though they ran the ball so effectively and so much, they were so much more efficient at that position. How does that look now with Justin Fields? That'll be the biggest for me, the eye test with OC and quarterback going into this first game.
Last one for me, Anthony, and I'm surprised, like I haven't heard a ton of this. For those of us old enough to have watched Aaron Glenn play, obviously a great corner, really good on special teams for a couple of years as well. And that's how you can steal a couple of wins. The penalties, you know, obviously maybe steal a touchdown or play the field position game from special teams. What is Aaron's influence on that side of the football? Or is it just all delegation to those coaches?
Nah, you know, he touches everything, man. Like, I love the fact that, I mean, listen, his back, he's very knowledgeable about all facets as a coach. I mean, obviously, when you're a defensive coordinator, you have to have a clear understanding of what offenses are trying to do. But now the people that he has, he's given them the trust. That's what you have to do. You have to entrust your coordinators and your coaches on what you're doing. That's why you got to build a great staff. And we'll see in how all these coaches come together. I mean, ultimately, his job is on the line dictated on the people that he hired. So, but he touches everything in practice, man. He's on it. You see him in every aspect, and yeah, his hands will be on all that stuff, especially special teams. And I think they do have some really good players from the return game standpoint. I think everybody's still trying to figure out how to really excel in the kickoff return game. Mm-hmm. So can they get a jump on that? Wongu's been really good the last back end of the season and in preseason. So he's a guy when you put back there, he's a little bit more of a running back body. That's what you need in that. And they got a head start on that. So that's a really good player there. So, and then, you know, the kicking situation, guys, obviously, we know in the past, obviously last year was a debacle, you know, Nick Folk coming in. I mean, again, everybody's like his age. Yeah, clearly, could he get hurt? Well, all that stuff. Anybody can get hurt, but he has been, I mean, the most accurate kicker over the last 3 years in the NFL, which is crazy to think that he was available to go get. But, hey, he's healthy. He's ready to go. And he's kicked in this area before, and he knows what it's like. I think he's going to be in a much better spot mentally than some of these other kickers. So, yeah, I think the special teams, as far as what AG's touching, it should be a bonus. It's got to be a bonus for this team. They need that at that side, that face to be a part of what they do to help them win games right now.
Did you get an interview for the Jets head coaching job, Ant?
I did not. No, I did not get an interview. Obviously, you know, really close to the organization. I had an interview with West Virginia, my alma mater. That was my one interview. And listen, I'm working on those things. My feet are on the ground now, being the best head coach in the UFL for the Battlehawks. But I do have aspirations of taking those next steps, and we'll see what happens on that. But you know, that's where I'm at in my world. I want to be a head coach somewhere. It's college. It's, you know, weaning up to the NFL. I love it. I love helping. And we've had some success in 3 years. We've done really well in St. Louis with a heavy turnover in our roster. So it's been fun, man. And I can't wait to see it. For Jet fans, like. Yeah, I played the game. I played for the Jets, but I also coach now. So it's a really good perspective. And for those that don't listen to the radio, whether they do or don't, it's a good listen, man. I try to give everybody a sense of, we talked about this last year when you guys were grilling me about my first year. Oh, you got to be honest. Like, I try to give you, like, real stuff, like the mentality of both sides as the player, as the coach. And it's fun. And me and Bob, I can't wait to work with him another year, man. It's been fun. It was a great year one. And ready to rock and roll Sunday, man.
I have two quickies for you about your personal career here, because you just mentioned it. How difficult is that to balance what you do with the Jets? I know it's part-time, obviously, in season, but what you do as a head coach, which I'm assuming is a little bit more work all year long. How do you balance those two?
Yeah, you know, there's a three-way balance, because what's really nice for me is my kid's a quarterback at Iowa State. Mm. I get to go to every one of his games. So I get coaching. I get to watch him. I spent 2 weeks with Iowa State and their staff in the training camp, just trying to learn and grow and that aspect. But I think it really does help me in all aspects. I have the best 365 days a year than anybody I can imagine, because I go to my kids' games. I sit in the stands like a fan, bite my nails off as a dad of a quarterback. Yeah. Then I come the next day, I jump on a plane. I go to the Jets game. I put my football hat on. Then I go coach for the spring, and I go through the process of evaluating players and cutting players and, you know, the closed door stuff. So, man, it's a great spot to be in. I manage it well. I've always been someone that's, you know, been kind of like multiple things going on in my life, but man, the coaching thing has got me going right now. And I kind of love bringing that aspect out in the actual calling of the games, because, you know, I think for me, like, I don't have to really be negative downer guy when you're calling football games. I kind of know how to, like, okay, like, that clearly is not what people should see or want to see, and we got to make sure we talk about that. But in a way, it just doesn't disrupt the framework. I think if anybody were hear me say something that were on a staff or anything like that, you would agree, like, yeah, he's right, you know. So I just think from that aspect, man, how you deliver it is important. And I love working for the Jets, man. I hope for success. I want them to be great. But you know, every game for me, man, I treat it like the Super Bowl, man. I love watching and calling football games and just seeing how things go down. And I guess from my coach's mind, I just break it down a little bit more, because now the situational stuff which is important to my life now, is just something that I look at. And hope we got to be better at that too, right? That in the past has not been great. So AG, that'll be something that's always, you know, we'll see how he does it. I think he'll be really good at it. But again, it's hard to do. And he doesn't call plays, which is great. So, you know, you got that focus. I don't call plays either. So I'm constantly thinking about the next play, the next down, the score. I'm like calculating. These things are going on in my mind. We talk about this stuff ad nauseum with my staff, and we're always on a group chat. Every game, college game we watch, these primetime things, these guys just continue to blow games, coaches, on time management. And we just say we learn from their mistakes, and we just try not to make them. And that's a head coach's job when you don't call the plays outside of everything else and building the culture like he's doing. Game day is a big day when you're not calling plays, and that's going to be a big part of winning games as well for this team.
Dude, the energy is contagious, man. We feel it, and good luck to your son. And listen, Shoesin has been phenomenal forever. You've been a great addition. We love Marty, but you fit in great. So listen, looking forward to the first one with the Steelers here. I know we'll talk throughout the season. Thanks a lot, buddy. Appreciate it.
Yeah, let me know anytime. And tell my guy Birdman, man. He's a GOAT. I love that.
Oh, yeah, Birdman. We will. He is the GOAT. We will definitely pass along that message. We'll do some more football with Ian Eagle and really other stuff as well. Ian, to me, he is the best broadcaster in the business. We were just talking about it a little bit off the air about other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think Ian is the best. And we're getting closer and closer to him officially being the number one team. It's been long enough. I get that you're behind Nance. There's not much you could do there. But and he's also had different pairings here. We could ask him about this. I mean, he's coming on in a few minutes. But he is so entertaining. He's so entertaining. It makes me want to watch net games.
He's good. He's phenomenal. And he's a really nice guy too.
I mean, did you ever get to know him?
I don't want to overstate it. I mean, I've interviewed him a bunch. I wouldn't even say a bunch. Right. A couple times, Teak back in the day. I think you and I had him on once or
yes,
so.
Yeah.
Right, we did.
Yeah.
And very friendly guy, down to earth, hasn't let success go to his head, and nuts and bolts wise, he's great. But he's also funny. He's funny on the air. He's terrific.
I love Ian.
Hall of Famer.
Looking forward to talking to him in just a little bit, and looking forward to watching him as he does the game on Sunday for CBS, of course, with his new partner, J.J. Watt, with the Jets. And, yeah, we'll get into the Giants as well, obviously, but a lot of baseball today, BT, that we've discussed starting the show with the Yankees. Let's get back to those calls here, 888-808-1019. Obviously, Mets on the table, too. But Adam in South Jersey, want to talk about the Yanks. What's up, Adam?
What's up, boys? Hope you guys are well today. BT, while you were away and Sal was on, I called Sal and I told him my new policy when Devin Williams comes in the game was to turn the game off. Because I knew no matter what the score was, I felt they were going to drop the game. And last night, I saw Williams coming. I said, okay, I'm going to stick around for a little bit. Three pitches, three changeups. I said, nope. I turned the TV off. I checked the results after. Listen, there is just bad juju with Williams on this team.
Mm-hmm.
And the Yankees are not going to be able to accomplish what they accomplished without the accountability that does not exist. And what the Yankees should do, because they really don't own for next year, they should DFA him to send a message.
Stop.
They should bring up a kid, because I'd rather see a kid fail than
Adam.
This guy still
Adam.
Fail, BT.
Come on.
He's fit. Come on. He's going to ruin. Listen, you think he's going to come into a game in the postseason and not give it up? Do you really think that's
No. What I see, what I think about Devin Williams, and I've said this before, unfortunately in October I see a walk, a bloop, and then a laser double in the gap that hurts the Yankees at a pivotal spot in the game. I don't trust him, but he's got
enough.
Then
why are you leaving him in?
Hold on, I'm going to tell you. He's got enough track record where you ride it out. Now, I don't think he's really built for New York, so I don't want him here beyond this year, but the DFA is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard.
I was going to say, where's his track record with the Yankees? Aren't we supposed to go for this year's result?
I understand that. It's been a couple of months, rather than 7 years, of being one of the best in baseball. I'm not even a fan of his,
but
come on.
It's been the whole season, Brandon, the whole season. He's had one little blip where he was okay for a couple of weeks, and every time he comes in, there's bad juju.
Hey, did Luke Weaver make some mistakes last night? What about Duvall? I mean, there's
Absolutely.
Other guys.
But it's not every time with them, BT.
I understand. It's not every time with Devin.
Oh, come on. Look at the ERA overall.
Adam, it's
that.
Not, though.
We know that. We know the ERA.
He pitched, not that we're trying to be apologists for Devin Williams. And
no,
thank you for
the opposite.
Yeah, well, I've been more pro Devin Williams. Actually, before the season started, I was more cautious about Devin Williams just because I don't think relievers translate necessarily from 1 year to the next. They're so fickle, you have no idea what's going to happen with these guys, especially after what Williams did in the postseason. However, if you watched his struggles early on this year, there was a lot of soft contact. Obviously, he wasn't far in the strike. So you want to blame some of the umps with that, but there was a lot of bad luck that Williams was pitching into early in the year. Not all of it, but there was some bad luck. Then he righted the ship,
mm-hmm.
and all right, so now he hasn't been perfect. He's certainly been nowhere near what you thought he was going to be. The furthest thing from what you thought he was going to be. And that is maddening, but it's not like he's the worst thing ever.
No, he's not, but I got to tell you, I even thought there may have been one more really good month. I'm looking at his splits right here. So in April, we know April was awful. You just chronicled that, but his ERA was 9, and we knew that. We lived through it. It was rough, right? It's early. And then he showed a little stabilization in May, but his ERA was still over 4. And then in June was when he was great, 0.93. But then July was 5.73, August 4.91, and September 54 in the smallest of samples. So he's had one good month, and he's had one outstanding month, and nothing even close that resembles a good month. He's been awful,
yeah.
But to DFA him is really just, I mean, come on. And I love the passion, and you call a lot, and I get it, you're frustrated. There's no way that's happening. 0.0%.
Yeah, nor should it. It's the same thing with Ryan Helsley, by the way. And you can make an argument that, well, they can't pitch Helsley whenever you don't want to pitch him. Like, they're better off trying to salvage him and getting him right, and if he doesn't get the job done, they're going to lose because of it. Same thing with Williams, than just cutting bait and not having him pitch at all. Now, they may get to a spot where you're only going to see Williams in zero leverage situations. Maybe the same thing for Helsley. I don't know, but do the math. It's hard to go that far in the postseason, through the gauntlet of the postseason, without having Devin Williams and or Ryan Helsley from each team's perspective having some kind of impact, positive impact in the playoffs.
I know what Boone said postgame because I watched it, and I know we got to get a break here, so maybe follow up on this after. I didn't love the rationale. Like, you know, obviously Devin Williams, where he came in versus Luke Weaver, I would have liked to have seen that flipped.
Yeah.
It was based on lefties and righties and splits and pitch preferential, driven by numbers, obviously, didn't work out. But I didn't love that. I did not love the way that sequence went.
Right now, a very special guest. I thought he was ducking me. Since I moved to the middays with UBT, I feel like I haven't heard from Ian Eagle in quite some time. We used to text, and now we do not. He's since moved on, and multiple partners at CBS. A new one will be unveiled this Sunday while he does the Jets game. Jets, Steelers, Ian Eagle, J.J. Watt on the call. We welcome to the show, Ian Eagle. How are you, Ian?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. First one, Juan Soto. Is there a locker room dynamic issue? Second one, Nolan McLean. Do you think if he put his mind to it, he could have played in the NFL? I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
It looks like he's 30. Going to start more trouble.
Oh, God. Do you actually watch baseball? Because you don't call it. I mean, you call everything else. Do you watch baseball at all?
I do. I grew up a Mets fan, so I'm into it. Yes.
How do you watch anything without, like, just critically analyzing what the broadcasters are doing? How do you do that, man? That's got to be impossible for you.
Yeah, I'm just on a Slack channel with Gary, and I just send him my thoughts throughout the broadcast. No, I can watch as a fan because I don't call baseball.
Okay.
And I can truly view it through that perspective. So all the things that you guys deal with on a day-to-day basis, the calls, the topics, I'm living in it. I'm the embodiment of it. I feel it.
How do you think Sal would be in the booth, by the way, Bird? How would Sal do?
Unfiltered, you'd have to put it on SNY after dark. Ah.
I like it. I'd put Dennis Miller to shame. All right, so how about your new partners here, Ian? You know, obviously it was new after Fouts with Charles Davis. I enjoyed you guys. Yep. I thought you were doing a good thing. Now they decide to move J.J. Watt from the desk to the booth. Where are you at with your new partner yet again?
Yeah, I mean, I'm hearing from a lot of people, and everybody seems to be saying, like, you're the most yoked booth, and I know. I'm not going to deny it. We have a very similar workout routine, and we wear the same size clothes. It's going to be great. No, to be perfectly honest, the whole lead-up to it has been fantastic. He's very prepared. He obviously has the experience as a Hall of Fame player. And then the added part of this job is, what kind of perspective do you have? What kind of takes do you have? Are you opinionated, which he is? And can you back it up? And then the little extra secret sauce is, he's got a tremendous sense of humor. He's self-deprecating. He wants to be a really good teammate. So far, so good. We haven't even called our first regular season game yet, just the two of us. We did a game last year on Netflix. We did a preseason game this year, Jets and Philadelphia Eagles, but I can already tell he checks all the boxes.
Mm-hmm. Just make sure it doesn't hijack and make it a Steelers thing. I know you won't let him, though, because of his brother here. Keep this one down the line, right down the middle. If anything, pro-Jets, Ian, let's go.
Yeah, I have a feeling that might come up at some point, but I think he has gone out of his way to make sure it's not going to be an issue. But clearly, he's still at a place where his brother is one of the premier players in the NFL. Their relationship is really close. There's a third brother brother that played in the NFL, Derek Watt.
Yeah.
And the crazy part, I mean, this is not really a known story, although I think I told it a few years ago. I asked him once, you're JJ, your brother's TJ, but your other brother is Derek. Why is he not DJ Watt? It sounds to me like a guy that would make a lot of money playing bar mitzvahs, sweet 16s, quinceañeras. And he said, you really want to know why? I said, yeah. This is when he was playing back in the day. He said they originally thought he was going to be DJ Watt, but they watched Full House, and Derek got made fun of at school because of DJ Tanner.
Oh, my God. Come on.
And the nickname went away. He's now Derek Watt forever.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
That's like a gold yarn of information.
That's funny. All right, so you've sat down with Tomlin quite a bit. He's been there forever.
Yes.
You, of course, you know Aaron, who played for the Jets and his coach for a while. I imagine you guys will sit down tomorrow, and if so, well, what do you expect from Aaron Glenn as the head coach now, the man in charge?
Yeah, we have 3 production meetings in the preseason with Aaron. He's very straightforward, direct. You can see why he's a great communicator with players. He doesn't beat around the bush. He just deals with it. And in many ways, similar to Tomlin, in that ilk of, hey, I'm just going to tell it like it is, and then we're going to handle our business from there. You know, the one difference is the common theme I heard in any of these meetings. Aaron played at such a high level, was a 3-time Pro Bowler. And when he walks in the room, guys, you remember, oh, he's 5'8". Like, this guy was one tough SOB to play in the league like he did, to build the reputation that he did. And I do think that translates in what he's trying to get across to his players: toughness, accountability, and being highly competitive. That's the one difference you'd like to see from the team this year. No idea if it's going to turn into 8 wins, 9 wins. I know, you know, some Jets fans want to visualize what this could be. They have to be competitive. They lost 7 games that were one-score games last year, and any Jets fan remembers a bunch of winnable games in a 5-12 season. You win 4 of those games, and you're talking about an entirely different kind of year. So the compete level, and I think the biggest difference this year, the defense has to turn the ball over. They've got to make game-winning plays. They have to slam the door shut in close games. That wasn't happening last year. And there's a new attitude. There's a new philosophy. And you could just feel a new vibe talking to the players. And they all would mention Aaron and his playing career and the connection made based on that.
But when you have a quarterback that has trouble throwing the football, that could be a little impediment there. What do you think of Justin Fields getting a fresh start here with a new organization, being the guy with the Jets now?
Yeah, I just feel a lot more maturity than the young man I met when he was a rookie in Chicago, and that's normal in the NFL. And, you know, fortunately, I've been doing this job a long time, so that means you do a lot of production meetings, players, coaches, et cetera, and you do see the transformation and the evolution, including a young Tom Brady or a young Drew Brees, and then to see what they eventually become. The thing with Justin, I think he was fighting the expectations in Chicago, and now is at a place and has to realize he's at a crossroads. This is either going to make his career and he's going to continue being an NFL starting quarterback, or he's going to fall into that next category if this season doesn't go according to plan, where you're just fighting to stay in the league and fighting to find the right situation and be a backup and accrue years in the NFL as opposed to having productive seasons and making a mark in your career. So I do think he recognizes that. He understands it. Had a bunch of Steelers games last year when he started and then when Russell Wilson took over. And there are still people in Pittsburgh that believe if they just stuck with Justin Fields, that their season may have been different. So he gets a chance to reinvent himself a little bit. And I'm curious to see what this offense is really going to look like. Tanner Engstrand comes over from Detroit, and he was the passing game coordinator. This is going to be a run-heavy offense. And the hit on the offensive line, Elijah Vera Tucker, that's real. Because it not only affects having a guy that you relied on that right side, but it affects the rookie, Armon Membu, who knew that he could look to his left and had someone that was trustworthy and would do his job well, which would take a little bit of pressure off of the Rook.
There's no question. That hurts for sure. Of course, Ian Eagle, BT and Sound on the Fan, Ian in the booth, CBS, 1 o'clock, week one, Jets and the Steelers, Jets 2.5-point home dogs. So, you know, somebody like JJ looks at the tape from a player's perspective and he'll come up with Rodgers still has it, Rodgers doesn't. You've been around the game a long time, though, so I don't want to put you in a spot because you are calling the game play-by-play, but do you think that Aaron Rodgers is still capable of slinging this thing at a pretty high level or no?
Yeah, I think he's still capable of slinging it. The questions with Aaron will come on movement, and he was one of the great, to me, pocket presence guys in that he could avoid a rush with a very subtle step to the left or move to the right. And that was instinctual. That was something that he had in him and then had the physical attributes to back it up. Brady obviously was great at it as well. You just don't have the same reaction time that you used to have when you're at that age. The positive if you're the Steelers is that you're really not asking Aaron Rodgers to go out and be a magician for you. And I know this term gets tossed around and is usually a negative connotation, but in this case, just go manage the game. Manage the game. The defense should be a top five defense. They obviously addressed the skill position with DK Metcalf and then paid him. And I think he's highly motivated. I think the tight end Fryer move is going to benefit greatly from Rodgers. The run game has been adjusted with Jaylen Warren now stepping as the lead guy, Caleb Johnson, rookie from Iowa, backup, no more Najee Harris, and an offensive line that they believe in. They are going young at the tackle positions with Broderick Jones now shifting to the left side and with Dantanu getting a chance to be healthy and star on the right side. They've got a young center. So I just think they're giving it one last shot, guys. If I look at their roster, what they did defensively, acquiring Slay and Ramsey, Thornhill, to me, it seems as if they believe they can go one last shot at this thing before they might have to make wholesale changes in the future.
How much are we going to be watching the Aaron Rodgers show during the broadcast? Is it like obviously it's the main storyline going to the game, Rodgers returning to MetLife Stadium, all that. Are we conscious effort here to make it about Aaron Rodgers in this week one matchup?
Well, we'll probably lead with Bubby Brister. Yeah, exactly. We're just going to go through the ranks of guys that play for both teams. Look, obviously Aaron is a focal point, not only because he just played for the Jets, but because where he is in his career. You know, this is someone that will be a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's in his 21st season in the NFL. He's 41 years old. And, oh, by the way, he has this whole chapter that he just went through, a bizarre two-year journey with the New York Jets that never quite took hold. So, yeah, certainly it's going to be a big storyline. But you guys know, once the game starts, go do the game. That's my philosophy. I don't believe in the theory that, hey, we got to do this many shots ahead of time. We got to get to this in the second. Let's get a feel for the game. The game's going to dictate where our coverage goes, in my mind.
It's going to be 40,000-plus Steeler fans there, Bird. Did you see that?
I did. Saw the fact that they are well represented. They travel really well, I'll say that. I had Steelers-Raiders last year in Las Vegas, and that ended up being Fields' last start. And Pittsburgh won the game, and they went 4-2 with Fields as the starting quarterback. That might have been 70%. Steeler fans in attendance for the Raiders and Steelers last year. They do travel really well.
Would you take a chance on Ben Simmons if you're the Knicks?
What do you need him for? Is it just a defensive presence, someone off the bench that could guard 1 through 5 at a minimum deal? Yeah, I would.
I'm with you.
I'm
with you.
If you're looking for more from him, you're just not going to get it at this stage of his career. And you saw last year with the Clippers, which seemed like a really good fit, by the playoffs, he wasn't really playable. They got to that stage where he was not in the rotation. So I just don't know come playoff time if Ben Simmons would be a part of your big plans for a team that believes they can win the Eastern Conference. But if he's accepting of the role and his ego can accept it, which I'm not sure is the case, I would consider it.
Well, yeah. Then that would be the deterrent. If the ego gets in the way of his new role, then I'm not interested at all. And by the way, I'm with you just from a basketball, like infusing him within the Knicks, you know, 5 minutes a half and, you know, passing over people, alleviating some defensive pressure from Brunson. There's basketball reasons that you and I could both list where it makes sense here. But he said yes, he's not even sure if he wants to play. So if he's not committed on playing, now I'm not even in a small role, if you don't know if you want to play, you're already basically saying, I don't want to play, so we don't need you at this point.
Yeah, the way I would categorize it, that stretch of time for the Nets, it was a number of mercurial players and personalities, and he might have been the most mercurial of the bunch. It was tough to read day in and day out what was going on there and what was motivating him.
Yeah. I also obviously famously got a start here at WFAN, was a part of the Mike and the Mad Dog show. You ever play golf with Francesa?
No, I've never been offered, but
so
I don't
never,
really
never almost
play.
Killed you.
Really,
basically.
You never been offered at all? Never?
No, I've never been offered.
BT and I played with Mike this summer, and
yes,
Mike had an errant shot that hit BT in the chest. So
drilled me right in the chest.
Yeah,
and that was by accident.
Well,
it's up for debate. Even my wife said it. He tried to kill you. I swear to God, it hurt like hell, man.
I thought, like, you, great. I might be having a new partner soon after that shot.
Yeah.
So,
and now BT's in litigation, so it's all good.
Yep, taking him for everything he's got.
Ian, you are the best. We appreciate the time as always. We'll enjoy watching you on the broadcast on Sunday with JJ Watt. Good luck this season. We'll talk to you soon.
Great. Just tackle the Soto stuff at the other side of the update.
Yeah, I mean, he's starting trouble again here, Bird. I don't know what to tell you. He started up.
He said it. I didn't. Those are the quotes from the paper. Thanks, Ian. See you later.
See you guys.
Thanks, dude.
Those are things you can text me about. Don't bring it up. No, I mean, we talked about it. Ian's the best because he'll send the emoji, the bird emoji when you text.
Like, does he really?
He tags it with the bird emoji.
No, he doesn't.
Yes, he does.
What?
He's got his own emoji. He's Ian Eagle.
I wouldn't expect that.
The Birdman emoji.
I wouldn't expect that.
He is the best. I wish we had an app. The better interviews with Ian are like Jimmy Trina does it on the SI Media podcast where you get a
there's
long
no focus. You just bounce around.
Long form. He's great. You got an hour and just talk about his career. He is tremendous. But anyway, I'm looking forward to the game with him on the call and JJ Watt. And you're right. It's going to be about Rodgers, Watt, and his brother. Like,
keep him in line, Ian. Or Ian.
Oh,
Ian.
Yeah. Ian will. Jesus. You know that. All right.
Of course he will.